GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thank you, Veronica Carter. I'm a scientist, author, and environmental entrepreneur who founded and serve as host to GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer.
And each week, Bob and I search for people that are changing the world and making it a better place to live.
Yes, but they have to make it better, and they also have to make common sense and economic sense in order to get here on GreenSense.
So, Bob, this week, whose sustainable ideas and innovations will be featured?
You know that song by The Free Design from the late 60s, Kites Are Fun? Remember that song?
I don't.
You don't remember Kites Are Fun? Oh, man. Okay. Well, you got to Google that one.
Sing me a rendition.
Kites are fun. Anyway, kites are fun. Also, there could be a way to generate wind energy, so we'll learn about that. Tom Appel has some green automotive news about diesel. Oh, and there's this really cool app that's going to help truck drivers save a lot of fuels.
All coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. GreenSense begins this week with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. It's Green Automotive News time. Tom, welcome to GreenSense.
Well, hi.
Well, it's been a while since we last talked, and we're talking about autonomous cars, high mile per gallon cars, but something we don't cover a lot is diesel engines. What do you have for us regarding diesel engines?
Yeah, the whole diesel engine thing has sort of been backburnered in a story, and public interest in diesels, of course, has been deeply injured by the Volkswagen diesel scandal. And that's sort of a shame because diesel engines can do a lot for us in terms of improving fuel economy and just for general vehicle ownership economy. So some interesting news. General Motors has decided that for 2017, it's going to offer a diesel engine in two vehicles. One is the redesigned Chevrolet Cruze, which came out in 2016, and the redesigned Chevrolet Equinox small crossover, which is due out in 2018.
Both of those cars are moderately priced. How do they bear the brunt of a more expensive diesel engine?
And that's a good question, and we'll have to see how that's going to work. People who were paying attention probably remember that in 2014 and 2015, Chevrolet offered a diesel version of that generation of the Cruze, and it sold relatively poorly. A couple of downsides to that it was only available with an automatic, and it was only available at a very expensive $26,000 trim level. And those are both barriers to ownership for a lot of people. The 2017 Cruze is going to be available with manual transmission and automatic, and the diesel is going to be available on all the trim levels, or most of the trim levels. So the price point, which hasn't been established yet, should be lower.
Will it be a difficult sell for a diesel engine with current gas prices being cheaper than diesel?
It could be. And certainly the people looking for better economy won't be moved by this. But General Motors, U.S. Operations President Alan Beatty, was recently quoted as saying that there's a huge loyal group of diesel owners out there currently not being served by Volkswagen. General Motors is going after that crowd.
Huh. Tom, I don't know what you call it, but a lot of cars these days have this feature when you stop at a stoplight, stop sign, the engine shuts off, and then when you press on the gas, it immediately turns on. What do you call that?
I just call it stop-start.
That's why you're the guru of gears, baby. So the stop-start function, do you find that more on diesel engines or more prevalent?
You will find it in these diesel engines, and you're going to find it in all cars in the next couple of years. For 2016, about half of all vehicles sold new come with a stop-start function. That used to be an exclusive purview of hybrids because it worked a little bit better with a hybrid system. But cheap stop-start systems have been developed, and they work reasonably well depending on the vehicle. In fact, when you're test driving a car, make sure you get it warm enough to see if you like the way that works, because it can be very rough in some cars and very smooth in others.
Tell us a little bit, how does that work?
Yeah, the stop-start system determines that once a car is warm, and it needs to be warm because you have emissions issues cold starting a car. So once a car is warm, as someone is starting to come to a stop, the engine, the gasoline engine or the diesel engine, will simply shut off and you will coast. When you touch, actually, it's when you come off the brake, the engine will start up again. And it can improve city fuel economy by 1 or 2 mpg, which is very impressive.
Yeah, it's amazing function. I first saw that a year or two when I was in Europe. The rental car I had that stop-start feature. And it seems like a lot of the European cars have this. So as you said, a lot of things will be changing in the future. And there's a lot of diesel in Europe, too. So slowly starting to come this way.
Yeah, the diesel in Europe is interesting because that's where the Cruze and Equinox diesels come from. These are actually developed by General Motors Opel division and very popular over there.
And what kind of fuel savings do you expect to see from this?
We know that the Cruze should be EPA rated with the base engine at 31 mpg. With the diesel, it should be closer to 40 or 41. Numbers aren't out yet, but the improvement should be dramatic. Should be about a third improvement.
Well, this is good news. Again, it's nice to see the American auto companies being innovative and staying on the cutting edge and also filling a void that Volkswagen created.
Absolutely.
Well, Tom, thanks for joining us. We always appreciate you taking time and sharing your deep insight, and we look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks.
Oh, always a pleasure.
That's Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. I'm Robert Colangelo on GreenSense.
GreenSense Farms, the largest network of commercial indoor vertical farms in the world, wants you to join in our green dream. You can now own a piece of the farm with our limited time equity offering. You'll be promoting sustainable farming by investing in our transformative growing technology. Visit our Start Engine campaign at greensensefarms.com.
You probably remember flying a kite on a windy day as a child. That could also have a far more important role as we seek out more sustainable ways to generate energy. Bill Hampton is the CEO of Kite Power Solutions. He joins us all the way from Essex in the United Kingdom to tell us more about the fascinating high-flying energy solution. Welcome to GreenSense, Bill.
Hello there. Yeah, Bill Hampton here. Yeah.
Well, the disadvantage of radio is you can't see. So paint us a picture. Tell us about your kites. These aren't typical kites that we flew as kids. How large are they? What do they look like? And how do they work?
When you get up to utility scale, these can be up to the same sort of wingspan as a 747 and all the stages down from that, depending on how much power you wish to produce. And fundamentally, what we do is you fly two kites at the same time, a bit like a two-cylinder engine. And we use a winch on the ground that physically generates the power. And one kite flies a figure of eight or a circular pattern. And what it does is, it by forward speed, it generates large amounts of lift. And that lift is what then pulls the line off of the drum and generates electricity. When one of those kites has finished putting its line off the drum, it flies overhead and a couple of hundred yards of line is then pulled back in again as the kite is flown down towards the base station. And while that's happening, a second kite flies into the window and starts generating power. So it's a bit like a two-cylinder engine.
Fascinating. How do these kites stay up in the air?
Now, firstly, I mean, basically, obviously, with a kite, fundamentally, when the wind is blowing, they wish to stay up there. We have some very, very high-end sensing equipment on there that tells us exactly what they are, what their orientation is, where they're pointing. And what we have is we then, for all intents and purposes, have a little guy up there we call the pod, who is physically steering this and is keeping the kite exactly where we want it. So that's the thing that's flying it above our heads and then down towards the base station and flying it in the figure of eight in the circles. So it knows exactly where it is because it has incredibly accurate sensing equipment on board, and it flies a pre-described pattern to generate the power.
What about weather? Does weather impair the ability to fly? No wind, rain? Too much
sun.
There's
no wind. I mean, the thing is, again, anyone who's flown a kite, if there is no wind, it doesn't stay up there.
No.
So the fundamental with low wind is, and we basically have very small wires go up the inside of the tether, and about 50 horsepower of power at the top is enough, even if there was absolutely no wind, to keep one of these up there. So if you imagine this thing's producing, you know, three megawatts, and with 50 horsepower of power put back up again, it can stay out there with no wind at all. Now, in reality, there are very few days when there is no wind at all. Then, obviously, with extreme winds, the interesting thing is these things fly every day at 150, 160 miles an hour. So high winds are what they are doing. You know, they're doing that every single day. So when they're parked overhead, you can leave them up in severe storms. And what they're seeing in wind strengths is similar to what they see on a day-by-day basis.
What about geographic specific? There's parts of England that are windy all the time, especially along the coast. Is this more applicable in some geographic areas?
Yeah, I mean the big one for us is offshore wind. We are able to deploy this onshore, and our first deployment is onshore. But that's fundamentally because obviously putting these onshore is a lot easier than putting them offshore. But the main reason behind this entire company is deep water offshore. So the end result is to put these on floating bodies off the shore, generating power.
Is this conceptual or is this in practice generating revenue?
At this precise moment, we've got the 40 kilowatt twin kite rig that has been tested, and we're just about to build the 500 kilowatt. This winter, we start building the 500 kilowatt. So basically half a megawatt, which is our utility scale unit, which again is an easily deployable unit designed again specifically to go onshore. That one, and that will be flying by the end of next year. So it's gone quite a long, it's quite a long way beyond conceptual now, and we're into producing the first of the sort of baby power plants, really.
So this is at a pilot level, but not generating revenue.
I mean, that those units will then go straight into generating revenue. So they basically next year, over the next 2 years, they go through their commissioning and their life, their early life testing, and then we're producing the first field to then go into revenue. But this is with 500 kilowatt units, which would not be compared to HAWTs today. That's a small unit. Whereas we're then doing the development for the 3 megawatt unit, which brings it in line with what is commercially available within the horizontal axis wind turbine, the standard wind turbine market.
If you just joined us, my guest is Bill Hampton, CEO of Kite Power Solutions, joining us from Essex in the UK to talk about their innovative way to generate energy. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Bill, how'd you come up with the idea?
The idea actually it comes from the 1970s from a chap in America called Lloyd, who was the founder of the idea. Basically, during the fuel crisis, he came up with the idea of using kites to generate electricity, and did a paper on the amounts of power that a single kite could generate. So the idea has been around for some time, but the technology hasn't been there to execute it. And the two big areas, I mean, the material science side, so basically the modern fibers that are available, and also the quality of the sensing that is available now, make this feasible, whereas even 10 years ago, this would have been a stretch to physically deliver.
How high will these kites fly?
About 2,000 feet is the maximum altitude. So they fly out at around about 30 degrees angle from the ground, and they reach a maximum ceiling of just under 2,000 feet when they're then pulled back in again by a couple of hundred yards before they're then let out again.
I'm a practical environmentalist, so I always think about revenue. Are you going to be putting advertising on your kites and generate a revenue stream from that?
I think it's unlikely. I think in reality, again, that the value of the space in relation to the value of the energy is probably not very well in balance. And I think if you watch these things flying, I mean, they're incredibly balletic, and I think putting advertising on them would rather ruin the visual experience myself.
Well, but then talk a little bit about the economics. How do you make these profitable?
Well, the thing is, the fundamental is taking the mass out of the problem. I mean, the more material you put into any solution, the more it costs. Now, a horizontal axis wind turbine sits on the top of a very tall tower, and all the force is pushing it backwards. So you've got to resolve that force in this great big tall tower. So you need a very, very dense, very heavy foundation, and then a very strong steel tower. And then on the top of that, you have the nacelle, the power of the generation, and then on the front of that, the blades. Now, what we do is we put everything into tension. So if you can imagine, we have you know, the kite, and then the piece of string is, or the rope is coming down to the ground, and everything's in tension. So there is no requirement for very large pieces of equipment. So, I mean, comparably, if you think you can take a small piece of kitchen string and you can pick up a chair with it. Now, if you try and balance a chair on the end of a long pole, firstly, it has to be very, very big, and the amount of effort needed to lift that chair up is massive.
So the cost to build the kite versus the cost to build a wind turbine?
The cost of build is around about a third for the system.
And any other additional costs? Is there permitting or siting these?
A lot of the costs are very, very similar to the horizontal axis wind turbine market. I mean, there is a large proportion of the cost actually goes into developing the site, the infrastructure, and as you say, the permitting to be able to deploy it. But they're comparable.
Yeah, no energy method is completely without environmental impact. What environmental impact does this system have?
We're in the process of actually doing a bird study on this. I mean, the one for us is very much, you know, what's the impact on the avian population. So basically, you know, how does this compare? Firstly, how does this compare with horizontal axis wind turbines? And the early studies have shown that it has a much lower impact on birds. During the entirety of this next stage, we have observers on site who are physically looking for, you know, for not just impacts, but basically the impact, the effect that it's having on the local bird population. Where we're citing this is actually what we call in the UK a site of special scientific interest. So it's basically a protected area that we're putting this in. And it has geese, some rare geese in the area. So basically, we are watching how this interacts with these animals, basically. But to date, the view is, and from the early studies we did, the view is that this will have a much lower impact than traditional horizontal axis wind turbines.
When will we start seeing these being installed, generating energy, and generating revenue?
2019. Basically, the next 2 years are getting this 500 kilowatt up and running, and during that time, we are consenting the first site for 10 of these units, which will be the first true revenue generation. I mean, in reality, we can generate revenue during our testing phase, but it's not. I mean, obviously, we're changing things all the time, so it's not going to be flying large amounts of time. So, it wouldn't be cost effective. It won't go cost effective till 2019.
Well, it's great to take what every kid loves to do, make renewable energy out of it, and have some fun. Bill, thanks for joining us, and keep innovating.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
That's CEO Bill Hampton of Kite Power Solutions joining us on GreenSense. This is Robert Colangelo.
GreenSense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
Without trucking, America would come to a screeching halt. Nearly 70% of all the freight tonnage moved in the U.S. goes on trucks. It also takes more than 37 billion gallons of diesel fuel to move all that freight. While new technologies are being developed to save fuel, it may end up that drivers may be the key to better fuel mileage. That's where Linked Drive comes in. And joining us to tell us more is Jeff Baer, the company's CEO. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, here's a surprising number from your website. Over 30% of fuel economy is under the direct control of the operator. So tell us, what can a truck driver do to save fuel?
It comes down to the right foot. The way the driver accelerates and brings the truck up to speed to move the freight, and the way they maintain that speed through changes in elevation and topography and weather has a tremendous impact on the fuel economy.
So tell us about your technology, Linked Drive, and how that helps that right foot control that fuel mileage.
What we do is deliver to the industry an application called Pedal Coach. Pedal Coach looks a bit like a stoplight, and the drivers are simply instructed to keep it in the green. What happens when they keep it in the green is they do the best they can with what they have to work with in spite of changing conditions. We have an algorithm that sets a proper fueling target based on all of the things that are out of the driver's control. So we've helped the driver focus on simply what is in their control. And when they keep it in the green with Pedal Coach, they bring the truck up to speed very, very smoothly. They maintain that speed through the elevations, and then it also follows that they almost never hit their brakes in a non-emergency situation. And as many people know, brakes are actually dissipating kinetic energy that was given to the truck by fuel to the environment as heat. So we don't want to ever hit our brakes unless there's an emergency situation.
I travel around a lot in the U.S., around the world, and I see every major city has major traffic jams, and they're mainly caused by trucks. Trucks stopped and stop and going. So how does this technology help in these traffic jams?
What it does is it focuses the driver's eyes on what's ahead of them. They get their eyes down the road. The industry refers to that as forward awareness. Whenever there's traffic, like Chicago or Boston or anywhere, the most efficient thing to do is to coast at the average speed of that traffic, as opposed to left pedal, right pedal, left pedal, right pedal, gas brake, gas brake. So when drivers follow pedal coach, they're essentially coasting at the average speed of those traffic jams. And when you see a truck driver doing this in a passenger car, it would behoove you to get in line and follow him, because you're not going to get through it any faster. And if you stay with that pace, you'll be a lot happier and safer too.
And we'd all rather move at 1 mile an hour than 0 miles an hour. So tell us a little bit about the new technology. You know, what is the technology that allows this stoplight to appear on the dashboard?
Right. Well, in the last 5, 6, 10 years, there's been nothing short of a mobile device, mobile software revolution. And so the computer that's in a smartphone or tablet has incredible amounts of processing and memory storage. And what it allows you to do is to look at information in real time and present that information to the driver in real time. Essentially, we have an aftermarket gauge that we've built on the Android platform. It's been referred to as a Fitbit for fuel economy, so to speak. So just like a Fitbit would give, you know, a consumer continuous feedback on their activity level, we're giving the drivers real-time continuous feedback on their fueling and efficiency of the truck. It all starts with that. Now, it turns out that we're able to take that high-resolution data, move it to the cloud, and render, you know, driver performance management and paper performance programs, and that's what completes the virtuous circle. So, but really, it's just the fact that the processing and storage capability on these mobile devices is vastly improved versus 10, even 5 years ago. In fact, all of those numbers from a processing and capacity perspective on my iPhone or Android tablet are better than the computers that I used back when I was in electronic engine control at Ford Motor Company. So it's amazing that we now carry that kind of power in our pockets, and we're actually using it in real time in the truck to help the driver do the best they can with what they have to work with.
You're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Jeff Baer, CEO of Linked Drive. I'm Robert Colangelo, and we're talking about how this technology can help truck drivers get better fuel mileage just by driving more conscientiously. Jeff, how many truckers are using this technology?
We're in about 18 fleets of varying sizes. We found a real sweet spot in the marketplace in the more local regional carriers with 50 to 500 trucks. Typically, these carriers have pretty good relationships with their drivers relative to the market at large, and they're good candidates for a program that would co-opt the driver as opposed to coerce them.
Well, some companies out there are giving bonuses to drivers who get better fuel mileage using your system. How useful has an incentive and a carrot been rather than a stick?
It's all about the carrots. You know, mathematically, our algorithms define the most efficient way to move a truck. The user interface is very simple and intuitive. It looks like just another gauge, but it's that pay-for-performance program that brings the driver engagement up to a high level. And I've never envisioned that pedal coach or anything we build would work if we don't put some skin in the game, so to speak, for the driver. So that's a fundamental piece of what we do. We help the drivers do the best they can with what they have to work with. It saves a lot of money and fuel, and the drivers are rewarded based on that. In fact, many of our customers have come to us already with an existing fuel mileage bonus, but they recognize that oftentimes those are unwieldy or unfair because so much is out of the driver's control. And, you know, they've come to us to leverage our platform to be able to make that very, very easy to do and very, very fair. So we do offer posted pay for performance for carriers if they want it, or we can feed the data to feed their existing plan.
Are you awarded on performance? And what I mean by that, let's talk about the economics. How do you sell your systems and how are you rewarded for success?
Right. Well, we sell the system on a monthly license. We can provide hardware if needed. but we typically do a software as a service model. And what I can share is that, you know, for most class 6 to 8 trucks that we're working with, that license pays for itself within the first week of every month. So that's how we're rewarded. We leave the upside for the drivers and the carriers. And, you know, as we scale our business, we've found a pretty nice repeatable business model associated with the SaaS model.
You talked a little bit about the Fitbit, and you have degrees from MIT and Northwestern, where you also played football in college. How did your gridiron experience help you in your business and your life?
Well, the gridiron experience, more than anything, has taught me about team building and the importance of the team and trusting your team. And the way that you learn to trust your team is you go out there and you practice and you bleed and you sweat and you know, you do crazy, crazy things that you would never be possible, that would never be possible outside of the constructs of that team mentality. So honestly, since Northwestern, I've been chasing the experience that I had there, where we had, you know, 100 and change, you know, highly, highly motivated individuals that every week, we set off to beat the team we were playing and to trust one another. So, you know, we ran into some hurdles and we got through them. And that's very, very analogous to the startup world. I've got a tremendous team. There are 12 of us up here in Boston. And we all have, you know, very specialized roles. You know, while you might say we all sell and we all use the product and we're all building the product, but we all have very specific roles. And as we've gone off the market together, we fought those battles. We've got bloodied and bruised and stronger together. And I'm having the most fun, you know, professionally with anything that I've done since playing Big Ten football at Northwestern.
That's Jeff Baer, CEO of LinkDrive. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. We'll be back next week with more guests. And Bob, who do you have coming up?
Well, we're going to learn about bioplastic, you know, the Pacific garbage patch, a huge problem. A lot of plastic doesn't biodegrade, but it doesn't need to be that way. So we'll learn about that particular innovation.
Well, visit our website at greensenseshow.com, download a podcast, or view the radio stations that air our show. If you have any suggestions, send an email to robert@greensenseshow.com. We hope our guest inspired you. Now it's your turn. It's time to take some action. No matter how big or small, small environmental changes multiplied by millions of people yield big results. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, providing a creative and collaborative culture, measuring success by the results delivered. Visit jltus.com.